football on Off the Ball.
It's a hammer blow for the league in many ways. Damien Duff and Champions League football sounds great together.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Yeah, you just had to be there.
You know, yeah, you had to be there.
And it was just great to say, like, all right, I was there for that. You know what I mean?
You had to be there.
I wish I wasn't there.
You had to be there.
And you have here.
All right, welcome back to Thursday morning's Off the Ball Breakfast. Delighted to have you back here for the final slot of the show this morning. And a very exciting one. It's the latest episode of You Had to Be There. And our special guest today is none other than an Irish comedian and Limerick's finest, Carl Spain.
Limerick's finest, yes. Especially since they lost to Dublin.
Hey.
I'm moving back up the chairs.
Was it, were you always into the hurling?
Not really. No, I'm not at all.
A bandwagoner.
Really. Not really. I played a little bit as a kid, but no, I'm... So I say football, but soccer.
Yeah.
I always love the people correcting you. Do you mean soccer? And I go, if I have a child and call her Beyonce, the original Beyonce doesn't have to change her name. But I would have passing interest in lots of sports, but football, soccer was my... Is my thing. Like, my father was a League of Ireland referee and linesman, and... My brother collects programs, works for the FAI now as the fan liaison, goes to, like, he'll go to underage tournaments, the women's tournament, you know, he goes to anything, everything. So, yeah. So I don't feel that obsessed by it because of my brother, but I would be more focused on football.
We do have a Limerick entry as one of your five.
We do, yeah.
But, in terms of, like, the peak of the success under John Kiely, too, did you find yourself going to those games or wanting to?
No, I was invited to that match to do a radio. That's why it stood out. So one of the five was the Munster final in 2019.
Yeah.
And I was invited to go on the Marty Morrissey radio show. And I was there with Brenda Dunhu. And I played hurling as a kid and I'd watched hurling and watched it on TV, obviously. But that day I saw a different sport to what I knew. And it blew my mind. Genuinely, the hurling they were playing, the passing, the movement. I was like, this is a different sport. This is like, and I said, how are they not winning everything? And that was the start of it.
Yeah.
But it was that thing of you're watching it going, this is mesmerizing. They were, it was amazing watching it.
Yeah.
And I thought this could be the chance. First since 73.
It's Corbell you're from, is it?
I'm from Corbell. They brought the All-Ireland to the primary school when I was a kid.
Oh yeah.
And I was about 18 months old in 73, if you can do the maths. And my hand was on it, and they told my mother, oh, he'll hurl for Limerick.
Hey.
Which she always thought was hilarious as I was growing up.
She laughed too much.
Yeah. First laugh I gave her, yeah.
How did stand-up comedy start? Did you get the Newcomer Award?
I did. I'm still dining out on that. I had always wanted to do it, but I was, as much as it's hard to believe for anyone, I was painfully shy growing up. I was always a bit shy. I was someone in the background. If you knew me, I could chat and be funny or whatever. But I went back to college to do this sort of stuff. I did media production in college, and the easiest gig was presenting. All the work, any project we did, all the work was behind the scenes. But if you presented it, you got the same grade. So I just realized, if I just show up on the day and talk to camera or do the presenting, you get the same grade. I went, I'll do that. So I kind of got a little bit of confidence in that. And a friend I was living with, a friend of hers came who did stand up, and I went to the gig, and I thought the standard was a lot lower than I expected, you know. So I thought this was all new acts.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought, geez, I could do this. So I gave it a go, and that's when I won the RTE thing, the New Comedy Awards.
I hear that so frequently from established stand-ups, that they go to an open mic night and they go several times.
Yeah.
Bill Burr was like that too. When he started off, went with friends and he was like, these guys are no good.
Yeah.
Give me a go.
And when I went to watch the first time, I met people who knew me and went, are you getting up? And I went, no. And I was like, did I think I could do this? Which was a weird thing. So people who knew me thought, oh no, you're funny, you should do this.
So you going on camera and presenting when you were back to college to get the same grade as the production staff behind the scenes, that actually stemmed from practicality rather than a career objective, did it, to stem away from your shyness?
Well, it was my career. I would have thought if I had to put, it would be in football journalism.
Okay.
Now, there wouldn't have been this sort of thing even then, you know, in my mind. Like, it would have been going to matches, writing about football, interviewing players. That's what I thought would be the dream job that I'd love to do. And that's why I was going back. Initially, then I was, if you'd applied for someone like DCU, you needed a language. So I even started studying French at the time, going back to Alliance Française in Limerick and doing French classes, which was a waste of time, really. It's long forgotten. But yeah, so I ended up going to Cloche de Doulig in Coolock, and it's more practical hands-on course. So that was the thing then. I thought, I'll be involved somewhere. And even when I started doing comedy, I thought, oh, I'll be behind the scenes, I'll be writing,
yeah,
and doing, which yeah, I do now, yeah, but I also do my own thing, you know, perform as well.
So how long did it take you to believe in yourself enough that you were a full-time comedian? Because I know you've toured with Kevin Bridges.
Yeah.
And you know, and Kevin Bridges said he's always waiting for the tap on the shoulder to be told to kindly leave the industry.
Everyone feels a little bit like that, you know. It happened quite quickly that I believed, because I won the competition.
Yeah.
And I was 28 when I started, so I was a bit older.
Right.
So I had a bit more life experience. So when I started, then I was like, this is great crack. And I remember Des Bishop paid me, I think it was 20 quid for 10 minutes.
Is that a corporate gig?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, 20 quid for 10 minutes. It was just, this is ridiculous. And you start getting a few quid. I think this is like a part-time job, but it can take me 20 minutes to earn the money I would working in a shop or whatever. So winning the competition, I started, because the scene was different then. There was so few comedians. If you were good,
okay.
If you were good, if you were funny, they said, oh, this guy's good. So the word of mouth was great. Everyone would push it. So I was getting calls from people. Oh, someone told me you were good there. So will you come over to Galway and you do 20 minutes? So I didn't even have to do an open spot for some clubs because that guy from Limerick is good. Give him a shout.
Who was making those calls on your behalf, or who was
just other comedians? Right. That's what we always did. You know, you'd if you saw someone good, we'd all get excited. If you see someone good, you go, "Oh, you got to see Ger Gilroy." You go, Ger.
So, but traditionally, traditionally, it's a nest of vipers, though, is it not?
It's not. No, it genuinely isn't.
Right.
There's a tiny nest of vipers off in the corner, but we'd all help each other. The one culture that's kind of lost a little bit, in somewhere like the International Bar, where we would have all come through, we used to all sit in the front. So when you're on performing, the other comedians were just sitting there slightly to the sides.
Right.
And
laughing.
Mostly laughing. Yeah. But they'd come up afterwards going, oh, Ger, that thing you do about going into the shop, do you ever think of saying that? And they go, God, I never thought of that.
Okay, it's a proper collaboration.
It was a proper thing. Right. And it's still like that to a degree. And I think is an important part of it. So we'd like, actually last weekend, it was about six of us chatting, and there was a bit of, it becomes so technical, and really for people, if you're not into comedy, you're going, what are we listening to?
Yeah.
You know, it's like mechanics talking about fixing a car.
Yeah.
You know, really, it can be, oh, and would you change that word to this?
It's so funny because like, I find one of the least funny things is people talking about comedy.
It can be,
Because you talk about it so structurally and almost objectively.
But that is the mechanics of it.
Yeah.
That's when you're going back and you're looking at a joke and you're going, no, that doesn't work because you use that word, or you take too long, or you're signalling the punchline by that, you know. And as you get more experience, you can see it. I can see it in others going,
really,
you know, and it annoys me. It used to annoy me before I did comedy. I'd watch a program and go, that was wrong. And it sounds, you know, I know it sounds arrogant, but it was more the way the brain works.
No, yeah. That's really
fascinating. You go, no, that's wrong. That's wrong. They did that joke wrong. That scene was wrong because I can't switch it off.
If comedian had like football managers, would that be a role that you would love?
It is that kind of thing.
Side of the stage.
But you would coach. I teach people stand up. The one I always tell the story was one of my favorite ones was there was a down in Tullamore and there was a priest, and I said, give me your funny story and give me your story, we'll make it funnier. And the story was his dog went missing, but everyone thought he'd gone missing. And I said, you know, I said to him,
Good setup.
And I said, say that. And he went, oh, I can't say that. So on stage, he goes, so my dog went missing. Everyone thought I'd gone missing, which was fine until my housekeeper's on the phone going, well, the last time I saw him, he's running around the garden with just his collar on him. And the room erupted. And you see the, like, he didn't want to say, oh, that's too much. And I went, no, trust me, it's comedy. It's not. And he looked up. It was like that, Mr. Me. He just, thumbs up, and I was like Mr. Miyagi nodding in the corner as the audience are roaring laughing.
When you say the audience, was it actually the church or was it a...
It's not the church, no, it's actually, it was a fundraiser that was organised. Anyway, he was a lovely man who, sorry we lost
him. there's no like... there's a, you know, you went to a course before, you were saying, you went back to college and studied media production that. But there's no course for stand-up comedy, really, is there?
I mean, there like, is now. I read about, there was one in Southampton University. When I started, I was doing gigs in Southampton, and there was an article in the paper about how you can study comedy now and stand-up in, I think it's Southampton or near
so
enough.
There is, okay.
And it's, now, there's a certain amount of you can learn a certain amount, like I would, like not all, I could teach ye quicker than I teach the random guy off the street, because you've experience with a microphone, you know how to talk, you know how to talk as individuals, you know how to communicate, you know how to be succinct with the point you're getting across. So there's things like that. Now, whether you're funny or not naturally is one thing, but that, no, I've taken away from him there earlier, but no, but that's a, it's a whole different thing about, right, and you know, so you've got that experience. It's, so there's transferable skills. You'll find actors like, are people who've done drama. Like Tommy Tiernan was a drama student. Deirdre O'Kane is an actress, you know, that does comedy. You know, but so they had very transferable skills before they moved over and discovered, no, this is the road I should be going down.
You've done acting as well.
I've done bits, but I wouldn't call myself an actor. Well, I do, sorry. I'm an actor and a writer, yes.
what's the difference? Because a live crowd, you get the buzz. And
yeah, but no, acting is it's just variety in your job. Yeah. You're going, oh God, I'm going to, am I going to go to Portlaoise the third time this year? Portlaoise is lovely. But it's something different.
So like everyone listening and watching this morning will know someone in their lives, or maybe they are that person who's really funny.
Yeah.
Really, really funny. And I can think of people myself. And you're like, but you wonder, like, would that ever transfer to a stage in front of strangers? So how do you know the difference? Because there's loads of funny
people.
It's
a huge difference. And that's the thing that people don't get. Is stage funny is that thing I'm talking about that you could do, is because you've a bit of practice that you don't realise you've skills that you could use in stand-up. I'm sorry, I'm done with this. I've always wanted to do comedy. But it's all well and good if you're going like, and do you know the way Jared does this? And you're going, oh my God, that's true, Jared does that. But then you tell an audience and they go, we don't know Jared.
Yeah.
You know, so you could be hilarious in the pub and Jared does that, and just, he does that thing with his glasses, or he does that, and you go, yeah. But that's the thing that people don't get. So sometimes you have to make it, create the bigger picture as to who you're talking about. And then the other side of that is someone like Donald Trump. There's a million people writing jokes about Trump. So to be original about him is so difficult.
Yeah.
So hard, so good.
That's not bad at all.
It's amazing.
That's the other thing. He's the most impersonated guy.
So
that would be a really good exercise in that course in Southampton, would be like, write a joke about Donald Trump. Yeah. That's really difficult.
Unbelievable.
It's so difficult. So how much of you are we seeing on stage?
I don't think there's a huge change for me on stage or off stage. I perform off stage as well. When I'm like, I wouldn't be saying like I'm in the car going, rolling down the window, hey, did you hear this one? But like, I'll go into a coffee shop and they'll go, okay, you can sit wherever you like. I'll go, okay, move those people. I want to sit there. And it's just, I'm still, that muscle is so in tune that I can't switch it off. So I'll be funny, joking or whatever.
Are you pen and paper guy walking around with notes or notes on the phone?
I don't take any notes. I'll usually remember stuff.
All right.
But sometimes I'll remember it on stage. So sometimes I'll tell her, I'll do a routine and I'll add a line live on stage and I go, oh, that works. And I'm in my head going, that'll stay in. And then I forget it. And I go, what was that line? And I'll do the routine. And when I'm back on stage, it comes again.
So your act is loosely planned.
to a degree, but when you've done something enough times, like you'll work out. I don't sit down and write.
Yeah.
I don't sit down and write going, oh, I'll talk about it. I can do it. Sometimes you do it as a project, or if you're working with somebody else, you'll go, what do you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
we look at different angles and stuff. So you can work differently. But personally, it'll all come on stage at some point.
I love the different approaches from comedians. Like Jerry Seinfeld writes everything down and he has like streams of notes, whereas Billy Connolly never had a thought and his mind just went out. And
there's no right way. There was Adam Hills, you know, he met Billy Connolly once and he was presenting a radio show and he brought prize winners to meet Billy Connolly at Sydney Opera House. And Billy Connolly comes along and they're meeting him on, they're all chatting. And then a comedian, there was another comedy show on in Sydney Opera House in another part of it. And the comedian comes along and sees Adam and goes, Adam, are you on tonight? And doesn't realise Billy Connolly is there.
Yeah.
And when Billy Connolly says, oh, you're a comedian as well, they got chatting. And he says, oh, do you want to go in and see that gig? And he goes, I can't watch comedy because it'll go into my head and it'll come out my mouth and I won't know where it came from.
Wow.
So he stopped himself watching comedy for that reason, which I found particularly interesting, because it's that thing, you don't know where it's coming from. Sometimes it just goes in and out and you're there gone.
That's something of a fear of plagiarism and the accusation of being...
You know yourself. I think most comics know. There's some great stories.
Because the Robin Williams stuff, that like...
Well, I think Robin Williams' brain was quicker. Yeah. But
What's the Robin Williams stuff?
He was accused of plagiarism. Like repeatedly, and eventually,
he sent checks to some comedians
to make reparations.
Do routines. Yeah. There's a bit of that. Like guys would come over from England and do gigs in Dublin, and then you'd see one of their jokes in someone else's mouth, and then you go, "That's so and so's joke," and then that guy come back and he's on with the same guy, and everyone's looking. He goes, "Oh, your man has forgot the Irish guys forgot that joke tonight." That's interesting.
Yeah.
So people know when they steal.
Would there be? Argy Bargy's behind the scene of that, does it?
Yeah.
Have you witnessed that?
Oh, yeah. It's great fun. The great one is when the two people, and the line mightn't be the greatest line. It happened once before the Cat Laughs, I'd say about 15 years ago. There was two comedians, well-known, really, really, it was almost like seen in The Sopranos, two guys going, this is going to get serious. And then a Canadian comic came over and did the same joke.
Right.
And we realised, it was his all the whole time.
Wow.
Which made us all very much laugh. You know?
I was watching you recently, I was watching you last night actually, and you come on stage and I was trying to think about how would I describe your approach, because I've seen you live as and it was like, it's...
Do you want to talk here, Ger?
I always feel like you're ready to go on the attack at any moment.
And
you're way, way different sitting here this morning, where it's like we could converse all day long now. But on stage, I was like, oh, you couldn't get into a conversation with Carl Spain because he'd just finish you.
The attack, if you, I don't know what show it was at, but usually if I'm hosting or something, you're kind of, I'll try and get stuff from the audience without delving into material.
You went straight into the audience,
Yeah.
So maybe you're hosting,
it was, I don't know, like the Ivy Gardens is coming up.
Yeah, you're doing two nights there.
Yeah,
I think it was
and
last year.
That's, you've the whole playground. So you've like, you know, sometimes you do a club gig and you might have whatever, there's 20 people, but somewhere like the Ivy Gardens, you've a whole array. You know, a whole array of people in front of you and you're going, oh God, look at the head in this, I can play with this or what's going on here. And you've got so much to have fun with, you know, and it's a big room. So, you know, if you get a bit of a laugh, it's going to be huge in the room.
So if you go out and you're like, okay, we'll do audience interaction. And if you get nothing from the audience, do you have a backup?
It happened in Belfast at the Cat Laughs when I went out and I was hosting. My plan was to just work with the audience. I got out there. I can't see the audience.
No,
you don't panic. You go, oh, so you just do gags.
Okay, so you always have something.
Yeah. So you work through it. It can be funny. Back to where I was down at the Cat Laughs, and I was in Kilkenny a couple of months at the Cat Laughs, and it's this thing that happened a few years back. I was sitting. There was a few comedians sitting around. So it was a few male comedians. And then a group of young girls came in. It was kind of the backstage, VIP after party. So a group of young, pretty girls came in and kind of surrounded us, about seven or eight. There was about four or five. Well, I think we were all in relationships. We're all just looking at them. They all sit down with an impress us attitude. And we're all looking at them. And we're all just laughing, going, oh, what's this? And before any conversation could start, another girl comes over and goes, the Kilkenny captain is over here. And they all got up and left. And we're all laughing, going, God, we know our status in Kilkenny. And then a couple of the girls came back and went, football captain. And I feel obliged to tell the people of Kilkenny that story every time I'm there now, even though, you know, we've heard that one, Carl. But it's like hurling captain, comedians, football captain for some of the girls.
Are you comfortable on stage?
Very much so, yeah. It's rare now, I'd guess, any anxiety, which is the complete reverse of when I started.
What was it like to start?
It was terror.
Even though you got newcomer, so you were doing
that
something
was,
right.
Yeah, well, that was, when was that? That was 2000. September 2000, but my first gig was in April. Wow. And I still would have been terrified going on stage. Like, absolute terror. This is the worst thing you're ever doing. And but the relief afterwards when it went well.
Was the relief better than the terror, which is why you keep going?
It would be. It's kind of, I felt like it was a vocation. I have to do this. This is it's like a calling. I have to do this. And gradually it faded to the point now where, I'd say it and I truly believe it. If you tap me on the shoulder and said, there's actually a secret room with 200 people there, I could walk in now and start a gig. I don't need, it's all there. Yeah. Like, you know, I have enough material there. I could work with you. I know I'm sound, but that's just, you know, I'm ready to go anytime.
Do stand-ups retire?
I don't know why they would. They do. There's people who stop for different reasons, like Eddie Murphy stopped because he developed a massive movie career, but no, I don't think they do. Mm. Like, there's people going of all ages, and there's no reason to retire. I still think I'd be writing jokes for somebody else or doing something, regardless of whatever state I'm in.
How does the writing for someone else happen? Do they come to you? You come to them?
They come to me. Sometimes, well, there used to be that thing of when we're sitting around going, oh, you could do a joke about that, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you go, oh, I never thought of that. Or that thing you do about such a thing. Do you ever think of that? You know, so we'd do that and it eventually would develop. And sometimes they go, will you help me with this? And you'd start working on things. So I've written for like awards ceremony, you know, the IFT is, you know, for different other awards things for people getting a tour together and they've gone, I've got 20 minutes, I need an hour. And then you'd sit down with them. And it's funny writing, you know, I'm in my 50s, white male, but I've written for black comedians in their voice, female comedians, really? Gay comedians, you know, and I find it really funny. It's a great challenge. And they're going, I can never do this joke myself. You know, it doesn't make sense coming from me. And sometimes you come up with a joke and you go, I don't have a place for that. And eventually you'd be working with someone, oh, there's this. And they go, oh, that's
that is amazing. Fully actually, formed. The difference is that's better over there with that person. Yeah, I'll take that one. That's intuition that you build up, I guess.
Yeah, and it's from years and years. Yeah. And watching, I find it hard to watch comedy now when I'm on. If I've seen the person a lot, I find that hard. You mentioned Kevin Bridges. When I was on tour with him, I watched him every night because it was amazing every night.
Yeah, talk to us about, so you supported Kevin Bridges, but you were the one who also helped him out at the start.
That's one of the ones. Let's keep that in. No, it's the thing, I think, I'm not the only one, but we would all help each other. So when I first gigged with him was in Edinburgh, I don't know, was it 2008? I was hosting this show and I thought, this guy's so good. And I went, I would have been over in the UK circuit the whole time. How do I not know him? And I said it to him, how have I not met you? And he goes, oh, I'm only gone like 6 months. And I was like, oh my God, it's like I've often said, it doesn't take talent to spot, a 15-year-old Mike alone is going to be a star. You know, he's so quick. And same with Kevin. So I just gave him numbers in Ireland. I said, if you want a gig in Ireland, ring, you know, I'll vouch for you. And he did. And he used to gig in Ireland nearly before he gigged anywhere else. So he'd be over doing loads of things, even when he tells the story about soiling himself going from Cork to Galway and having to get off in Mallow, change into his shorts on a January.
Tony Mallow.
And stashing his jeans somewhere and getting back on the bus and people going, what's that smell? Anyway, he's told the story, so I'm not talking out of school. Yeah. But no, it was just being nice to someone, not because they're famous, but just because you think, oh, this is good. And I do think, you know, you help someone along the way, it'll be payback. It's, you know, it can be selfish as well that you're, you know, if you help someone, you get rewarded for it.
Talk to me about the social aspect of touring. So like, yeah, when you're touring with Kevin Bridges,
that's the best gig you'll ever get. It's touring with anyone big, like that was an arena tour. So you're staying in the best hotels, you know. Well, for me, footballers were coming a lot of the time to gigs. So I was actually in with Kevin. I don't think I've told the story. I was in Gordon Strachan's house the day was it 2016 when we beat the Scots to the Euros? Was that
qualifying campaign?
Yeah. I was in Strachan's house the day the draw was being made for the finals. He lives near Coventry because his kids and grandkids are there. So myself and Kev were doing, I can't remember who was headlining that night, in Warwick University, which is more or less in Coventry. So Gordon Strachan was coming to the show, but he invited us for lunch in his house. So we're sitting in his house and it's Gordon Strachan. So, and he's telling all these, you know, football, ask him anything. And it's, you know, it's incredible. I'm going, this is an incredible privilege. It's, you know, it's better than a podcast. It, you know, it's all chatting about different stories. His wife's wrapping Christmas presents up in the mezzanine of their living room. And it's just, this is mad. And he was giving us a tour and he had all this music stuff up on the wall. And I was like, where's your football stuff? And he goes, oh, my sons weren't as good as me. So I don't want to embarrass them. And I went, I'm sure they're proud. Yeah. But he had like Sinatra signed stuff and was all like Scottish bands like Simple Minds and stuff like that. Yeah. But when you're torn, that was the, you know, Jack Grealish came to Manchester and hung out, which was a whole other. I mightn't tell all that story. He's a great character.
Is he? Yeah.
Oh, he really is. You really like him. And I said to him, I was giving him a bit of hell for not being, didn't you used to be Irish, Jack? And he starts going, I tell my ma when I go home. And he was going on about all the under 21 players he's still friends with.
Ah, no way.
Yeah. He says, I follow Shamrock Rovers results and stuff like that. Yeah. No, Jack was great. But lots of the players would come because they all love Kevin. It's funny, actually, of all the, all the footballers who would come, like Robertson was there another night, Brendan Rodgers, but they won on one of the tours. Kevin got messaged that Roy Keane had come, but Roy Keane had bought tickets and like didn't go. I want to meet Kevin. The rest of them would go, you know, that classic thing. Of, yeah. Oh, can we meet up after the show? And they're like, yeah, you know, Darren Fletcher was there. Darren Fletcher was an amazing man. Great crack.
Was he? Yeah.
Yeah. He nearly played for Ireland. Mayo, Mayo mother.
Yeah.
If we could get one of the sons now, it would be good.
Are they good? Yeah.
Well, one of them's on the edge of breaking through at United.
Right. Yeah.
The twins.
Yeah.
Jack and Tyler, I think.
Yeah. So what's the difference then, would you say, like culturally, or is there, say, with Irish comedians and the comedian scene here, and then in Britain, and then in America, or is it all very much one community?
It's, well, we'd all know each other. I've described it, and I think there's something in this with, in a way, it's like the mafia. So if we were two comedians and I knew Joe's another comedian and I go, he's one of us. So there'd be an instant kind of chat and shared understanding.
Yeah.
Do you know, you're going, oh, he's a comedian. Yeah. And shorthand. So you're chatting away. You know the person. We've enough shared identity or we know each other. I think in America, there's a different, like in Ireland, it's storytelling. So there's no rush to get to the, you know, you'll be funny all along. But you'll see in the UK, and it's coming a little bit here, in the UK it's like, okay, that's funny, right, next joke, come on. You know, guillotine laughs, where the laugh is there and gone, right, yeah, come on, give us more. That's not,
you know. Is that for social clips?
No, just with the audience, they're like, yeah, come on, more. They want it more, faster, you know, whereas we're more relaxed. But I like it, the variety. I'd love to be on with, you know, one of those one-liner guys, kill, and then, you know, someone else. The more different they are. The Americans are, they have a certain style and some of it transfers, some of it leaves me cold. I'm watching massive names going, this isn't for me.
Really?
It's not being they're wrong or I'm right, but it's, you know, it can happen.
Because
you know?
It's so subjective, it's just fascinating to me, the writing process, because there's not not a Bible on stand-up comedy.
There's probably a million books on it.
Yeah.
There's some great books written on how to write, but they're, you know, but it's, again, it's like going, oh, this is how I take a free kick. Right, just hit it. Oh, yeah. And yeah. Oh, my God, every time he takes it like that, he puts it in the top corner. It's not working for me. Yeah. Let me read it again. You know, so there's a bit of that. There's a certain...
Ashley Cole was talking about that recently, that when he trains fullbacks, they're like, how do I play like you? And I was like, you won't be able to play like me.
Yeah.
I'd be totally different to you. Who's a comedian that makes other comedians laugh backstage?
Oh, that's me. Unfortunately, not as much on stage. No, I do. I do. No, I would be the one.
Would you?
To annoy people backstage. And I would be, as I say, on. You know, and it's part of what gets me going. So if we're in the dressing room waiting to go, I'll be going.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'll be on. Jim Jefferies used to be.
Oh, the Australian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Used to be like that, but he'd sometimes be taking you down a peg or two. I saw him destroy a guy one night. One weekend, we were in Edinburgh, and he was just teasing him, and I could just see a man crumble. And then I was kind of gone on the Friday night, and I was, Jim destroyed the place. And then on the Saturday night, he has a go again. I went, leave him alone. He goes, you weren't much better last night. And I went, oh, God. Oh, God, no.
I'd say it's competitive.
It can be competitive, but I would think 90-odd% is respectfully competitive. There's the odd character that you go, oh God, he's, you know.
Yeah.
We used to have it when I used to do the UK a lot more, like 3 weekends out of 4, I'd be on a flight out of Shannon or Dublin to Bristol, Birmingham, you know, somewhere. And you'd look up who you're on with. And once you got to know everyone, you'd be going, oh, great, this is going to be a great weekend. This is Friday afternoon in the cinema and a great lunch afterwards. And there's other times you're going, better bring the PS2 with me in the bag this week.
Yeah, I suppose that's relatable for everyone, isn't it, in every walk of life. We start with your list.
Let's go. Well. In any particular order.
So football is your big thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely,
yeah.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So you saw Zinedine Zidane.
I did.
In that performance against Brazil, 2006 World Cup.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I picked that one because that iconic moment in the match where he kind of beats 3 players and they're kind of tackling, they kind of get the
His
ball.
His first half
through.
Of that match is amazing.
Yeah, it's just, there's many matches when he did that, but like, you know, it was funny that because the World Cup is kind of corporate-y as well. So I'm watching this going, oh my God, I'm looking at this. And then I look around and there's people texting, I'm at the match. I'm going, Blew my mind a little bit, going, just watch, you're missing, you know, they'd be going, oh, I was at that. Yeah, you didn't see it at the time. But watching him play, it was just, it's that thing of seeing someone so good. Like you're thinking, he's playing against the best players in the world.
Yeah.
Ronaldinho, you know, is another, you just watch
Ronaldinho, Ronaldo
do things
was playing.
And you're going, I've tried that.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't do that on FIFA.
Do you still play yourself?
No, I haven't played in not too many years back. I played, used to be a comedian's match in Kilkenny.
So there's some good footballers.
There's some fine footballers. Days. Some you wouldn't expect.
Like who?
Milton Jones is a great footballer.
He.
Noel Fielding.
Noel Fielding?
Yeah, John Bishop. But John Bishop's brother was a pro. Eddie Bishop at Tranmere. And John, there's a clip of, if you find it easily, I don't know if you've ever seen of Eddie Bishop was coming down the steps at a Tranmere match and fell and tripped over and fell onto the pitch. And John goes, that's funnier than anything I've ever said. So he's upstaged me in football and in comedy.
I could see Bishop being like a good
defender. Amit Jalili is the one deceptively good as well. He's great technique. I used to play for the rest of the world against Ireland. Now it was to get a game because there were so many Irish comedians. So it'd be like 8 guys waiting as a sub. So I just went, oh, I'm Spain. I'm playing for the rest of the world. And I got on and I scored in one, I hit the crossbar and I was getting booed by the Irish fans. And I went, sweet boos of recognition. They have to know I'm Irish. They'd be booing me as a traitor.
I was just thinking 2006 is like, you're very well established by that point because you're on TV a fair bit. You have your own shows at this point, don't you?
I'd been on, I had the Carol Spain Wants a Woman. Yeah, I actually met you at that World Cup. It was in Leipzig. It was after Mexico, Argentina, and I predicted Argentina as the winners, and it didn't go out till after Argentina were knocked out.
That's the game Maxi Rodriguez scored a ridiculous goal.
It was, actually, the highlight of that match was I was behind the goals. And at one point behind the goals, Aymar and Messi are. Aymar has shown Messi tricks.
Pablo Aymar.
Yeah, he's shown Messi. I think Aymar was Messi's hero.
He's
slightly older,
but
he was one of the heroes. They're doing tricks behind the goal, and the match has gone on. And I'm not looking at my phone, but I'm watching Messi and Aymar play, do tricks. And like, there's one like, can't even describe, you know, flicking the ball around your leg and your leg over. And Messi couldn't do it. And Aymar's laughing at him. And by the end, like, Messi's doing it. And you're just watching these two incredible, you know, obviously Messi, one of the greatest ever, you know, but...
Well, they left Messi on the bench.
Yeah.
That was Peckerman, wasn't it?
It was Peckerman. Yeah.
And like, Maradona, I could see Maradona up in the stands.
So how did you meet?
Because I was working...
You're doing a thing for RTE.
Doing the Gatecrasher thing. I'm surprised it went out. Most of our stuff went.
Did it not? So it was after the match. I was rushing back to the I think I met you outside the train station in Leipzig.
That's ringing a bell, like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We definitely had a good night that night in Leipzig.
All right.
Leipzig is class.
I was there for the Euros. I spent a week there. It was
right.
Oh, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
I remember more of the aftermath of like...
Yeah, yeah. Because I was in and out that day. I got the train up.
Yeah.
And I met Paddy Agnew on the train.
Right.
And I was sitting with him. And then I realised who it was.
Yeah.
And we had a great chat. And went to the match and got back on the train and went back. I can't remember where I was staying at that stage. But yeah, that was a great World Cup.
So you watched Zidane's third last game ever, basically. It was that match. Yeah, and that first
half. Now that you put it like that, it feels more important.
He set up Henri for the winner. I was looking at last. I saw your entry first and he sent it to me. And I couldn't remember the score of that game. It was 1-0. Thierry Henry roofed the net. And then they beat Portugal, I think, in the semi-final, which I don't remember at all, actually,
everyone
that game.
Thought... Brazil were going to walk that World Cup.
Oh yeah, well they had like
on paper
Adriano and Ronaldo and Ronaldinho, Kaká,
Rivaldo,
but Zidane had retired and come back to play against us
to knock Ireland out.
But that performance in that first half against Brazil,
it's just watching someone, and he's almost as a manager he did the same. Oh yeah, I'll manage Real Madrid for 2.5 years and I'll win 3 Champions Leagues,
and it's not really talked about that much, like that he's this Champions League winning manager multiple.
I think as a coach or manager, there has to be a bit more longevity to get the credit. Like Roberto Di Matteo is not seen as
one
of Chelsea's greatest ever coaches. No. You know, Tony Barton for Villa, you know, yet they have the little Champions League beside their name.
But for the younger viewers and listeners out there, well worth looking up Zidane against Brazil 2006 World Cup, because there's a highlights package on YouTube and he does step overs and he kills like 3 Brazil players in one movement.
It's when you do that, it's when you do the step over and they work.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Like to bring it to comedy, there's comedians who have all these skills that can do impressions, can do, you know, everything, physical thing, and you eventually see it come together.
That's
so it's like that with like a player who can do all that, and sometimes it's unnecessary. So sometimes even a guy doing an impression, and you can, there's no point to that. You've just done an impression with no context, and go, oh, it's funny. You sound like when I sounded like Trump earlier.
What do you think of impressionists?
Oh, some of them are amazing.
Yeah,
you know, like there's some like I find when it's done right, it's incredible. You know, you watch it, you're going, oh, it takes you to another place, like, you know. But yeah, but it just when it's unnecessary, it's you know, you just go, oh look, I can do this voice, but there's no point to it. That annoys me.
That's really
again, that's me going, that's wrong.
No, but it's
that's
fascinating.
Wrong.
Like, so it's like you can put a comedian in a different position. So it could be like, you know, Eddie Murphy could have been a winger or whatever.
Yeah, well, the flair players would be the guys who could do everything. Yeah, the impressions or sing, you know, or play guitar, you know, that kind of thing. You go, they're maybe a number 10.
Yes.
You know,
what position are you?
I'm always a defender. Always a defender.
There wasn't much defending done in this other entry you have. Manchester United 7, Roma 1 in 2007. You actually highlight Ronaldo in this.
Yeah, it was just, that for me was, he used to frustrate me when he came over. You could see there was so much talent there. But I was there, well, just put it, you know, in that kind of thing, put it together. Come on. But I think he was putting it together by that stage. But that was more... Just, I remember actually, I don't know how far ahead they were that night, and I was still worried about away goals. If Roma
were ahead from the first leg.
Yeah, they were, but there was still that nerves of an outside. The funny thing about that night, I was meeting a guy I didn't know to give him his ticket. I used to have 2 season tickets at Old Trafford for a few seasons, and I don't want to say who I support. I was under the Sir Matt Busby statue at Old Trafford. There's, you know, that's up high, built in, and my cousin rings me, are you at that match? And I went, yeah. I says, there's trouble outside. And I went, oh yeah, and the police are here on horses and everything. Yeah, it's under the Matt Busby statues where the trouble is. And I'm like, what? He was watching on Sky Sports News the police charge, and I'm behind, like, literally it's like the police are protecting me the way they're set up. But I was going, what? And he's there, yeah. And I went, that's where I am. And he went, are you serious? So I can see in the distance, but it's, you know,
150 yards away, yeah.
Well, it's not even, it's 50 yards. Right. It's just beyond the other side of the police barrier, but they're literally not doing it for me, but I was one of the few people that were
Ireland's
inside that,
treasure.
Just waiting for a guy for, I have tickets there, let's hurry.
That was Ronaldo's coming of age season for sure, because the wink was the summer before at that World Cup that you were bought that.
I'm not sure, because I obviously was there. Is that the match where Dunphy attacked him before the match?
No,
it's
that
almost
was
like the Platini one.
I think that was 2005. But they lost to Benfica.
No, there was one he attacked him and he was outstanding.
Oh, okay.
There was one, I don't know. I don't think it was that
I'm
looking
match.
To the slightly older man, possibly. Because I'm old enough to remember the Platini one.
Yeah.
In 84, European Championship.
I remember him having loads of goals at him over a short period of time. But
Platini owned
that
tournament, and Dunphy was attacking him because I think it was a Liam Brady thing, because he'd replaced Brady. He'd go, no, Brady's, you know. And it was like, then Platini scored in the first match and he got a hat trick. He got two. But
it was a perfect hat trick before
it was Belgium again.
It was a left foot, right foot and a header. That he scores a hat trick. Before that one is the one famously, like, and whatever he said.
Yeah, half time. Now, you've seen the good Platini, then at the end of the match, you know, I've always liked this guy. Like before, middle, and after, it was the perfect, perfect Dunphy.
Do you know that was Ronaldo's first Champions League goal proper?
I didn't know that.
And Alan Smith's first goal in 2.5 years.
I remember Smith scoring. Yeah, yeah. It was one of those.
So what year is this?
2007.
Okay, because this fella is a codist in the 2008 semis. Arthur says so. Even a year later, he's committed.
Wow,
that's well into it. Like he scores 40 odd goals that season, 2008.
Yeah, no, you could see. No, he was coming together. I think it was all that thing of they were going. Rooney's the real guy and all that.
Totally. And you say that now and people scoff at that, but it's absolutely the case. Like between 2003 and 2006, people were getting very frustrated with Ronaldo.
Rooney was made. I think the weird thing that I find damning about Rooney is he's younger than Modric.
Yeah.
Modric
has just gone to AC Milan.
Maybe if Rooney had looked after himself slightly better, you know, and you think, Rooney is very much in the past as a player now, you know.
Past as a manager
Modric
as well.
Modric probably got another couple, you know. It's amazing the guys into their 40s now, and you think, is Messi waiting for Ronaldo to retire before he picks his end date? And goes, all right, he's got him. What can I do before before I retire?
I love if they're that petty at that level. It would be incredible.
I'm going to move to Saudi and win 3 league titles.
So United, they lose the Champions League final or semi-final that year against AC Milan. Milan beat Liverpool in the final. And then next year, United win it.
Yeah.
But then another entry you have is a game that it was part two of the Barcelona humiliation, 2011 Wembley.
I think the 2011 was the humiliation. I was at it and I was weird. We'd applied for tickets and my brother, being a football fan, I think we'd applied in every multiple times in the UEFA lottery. I don't think you can do it anymore. So my sister Tara was sitting on a ticket for Trevor Spain, a person who doesn't exist. So when we collected the ticket, I went in and went, is this Trevor Spain? No, it's Tara. Trevor is the Irish for Tara. It's Trevor. And they went, okay, and handed the ticket. And I sat up and I'm watching that and it's one of those, you go, I've supported Ireland over the years and gone, you know, you think, all these fancy Dans, we beat them. But I'm watching that going, oh my God, this is ridiculous. They're like toying with them. And then they went one up. When Rooney equalised, I remember actually laughing, going, if United win this, it's a crime against football. And I wanted them to win. But it was, you know, you kind of felt privileged to be there. It was so good.
Definitely,
you know, it was the least painful, you know, big match defeat I've ever had.
It was a real humbling, and for Manchester United that night. And even afterwards, Alex Ferguson's applauding them on the side of the pitch when they're accepting their trophy. And you just don't see that. Never really saw that from Ferguson at all. But they did that mad thing where they played a two-man midfield that night. Like they played Michael Carrick and Ryan Giggs against Xavi and Busquets. It was crazy what he thought.
There's that thing of British football. And as much as we'd hate it, the Irish play British football as well, that they'll just pass the ball around you. And I think it's changed now in the way coaching is, but the way it used to be is like, you know, well, we'll run at you and then you run at us. And if we give the ball away, sure, you give it back to us when we take it off you. But then the Spanish just said, no, we're going to keep the ball for a while now. No, you're meant to give it. We're meant to be able to tackle you. Will you stand still? You know, it's like the Ireland match in the Euros in Poland. it was like
Spain game.
Yeah, it was like playing with a broken controller. FIFA, like you're watching them just going. They could have, if Spain needed 10 goals to go through, you reckon they could have got them. Like it was, yeah, that was humbling. You're sitting there going, oh, geez, we're having a great thing. So actually, the big cheer from the Irish fans that night was the in-house stadium thing. They put up a picture of a gorgeous girl and there was a massive cheer. Then they put up a picture of another gorgeous girl and there was a massive cheer. Then they put up a picture of a girl who wasn't as attractive as the other two, but was still very attractive. And the crowd booed. And her face falling, going from, oh my God, oh, I'm Jesus. The next, to, oh, was, you know, you could hear just all these men who had no right to judge anybody going, ha, 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 ha. That's how that was the only victory the Irish took that night.
You were a season ticket holder.
I was, yeah. For about, it was three seasons. The last three Ronaldo years.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't keep going over because I work weekends.
It's a mad commitment, isn't it, to be a season ticket fan from a different country.
Yeah, thousands.
We had one in studio recently because this guy is sitting in the area where Jim Ratcliffe wants to move all the fans. And I was asking about that. And he's like, yeah, it's a lifestyle choice, but it costs a fortune. And you have to be so committed. Yeah. Every other weekend you're travelling.
It was, I didn't go over that much. I'd kind of pick and choose. Hmm. I picked the Liverpool 4-1 defeat when Torres, if I wanted to pick Torres, I could have picked him that day. And the funny thing about that day was leaving. I'm not one for scarves and jerseys and stuff like that. So you could see guys looking, you know, United fans looking for people who are Liverpool fans hiding amongst. So I was an old man went, hey! Hey, Dad! And I'm walking down the road chatting to this guy, hey, how are we getting on? Going, realising how, you know, they were just wound up over it. But yeah, it'd be tense. But it was great to go over for a time, you know, and go, oh, I'm familiar with it. I was at the, when they beat Barcelona to get to Moscow, Scholes got.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah. So watching Messi, that I could have picked Messi, but it was like watching him that night run across the ground. It was like watching, he was the only one with ice skates and they're playing on ice because it was mesmerizing watching him.
Yeah.
You know, at times just fellas almost falling over trying to even get in his way physically.
Martin O'Sullivan in touch on YouTube. Please give Carl Spain a job covering the football.
I don't know about that.
Two non-football entries.
Well done, Martin. That's one of my fake accounts.
One of them here is, your burner account. Yeah, Limerick beating Tip in the 2019 Munster final, which we touched at the start there. This is Tip's worst defeat in the final since the 1940s in the Munster.
Yeah, final. I could have told you that.
Well, Tip wanted to win the All-Ireland, of course, 2019, but that was a hell of a win for Limerick, having just won the All-Ireland the year before.
Yeah.
Why have you...
was that not the year they went on to win it? But they won the Munster...
Yeah, this is...
the first year of the All-Ireland.
They won in 18 and then Tip won 19.
Is this not the game where Tip are massively up at halftime in Limerick?
No, I don't think... because it's hurling, my memory isn't ideal, but my memory is they won the All-Ireland that year. And it was just seeing them going, of course they did. Was that, did they beat them in 2018 then or something as well?
Yeah, Limerick won 226 to 214 in this game.
Yeah.
Fairly short Tipper up at half time and Limerick put their signature performance
together.
Yeah, it's
game for ages, yeah.
Yeah, 19. The brand, I mean, Tipperary played their part, but I just couldn't get over it. Like the hurley's up in the air and the lads flicking. Yeah. And I was going, this is a level of skill.
It is
that I hadn't seen. I hadn't seen. Yeah,
totally.
Even when I was in school, the teacher used to teach us ground hurling.
Oh yeah, I remember that too. We used to do that. Yeah,
just hit it on
indoor
the ground.
Hurling, which is basically hockey.
Yeah, no, this was out in the field.
Oh, did
and
you do it in the field?
Ground, and I was like, do we not raise it? Would it not be better?
You're not
realize the standard of us as a group wasn't quite. I did say hurling was my thing.
Did you buy your ticket for that? How did that come about?
The Munster final?
Yeah,
no, it was Brenda Donoghue was working with Marty Morrissey's radio show. So I was brought as a guest. Yeah. So it was a Limerick-based guest. So she brought me to the match. It was actually funny. We were there and she was telling the story. I think it was, I won't mention which of her children had been given a hurley and brought it in Portugal and met a guy named Nicky English and was saying, oh, I've got a hurley. And he goes, oh, show me what you do. And he was the kid was describing hurling to Nicky English. And Nicky was there. Oh, yeah. And Brenda was laughing, going, oh, I told him afterwards who you were.
Limerick, as a city, like, it's so sport dominant. Like, also rugby, of course. Like, did rugby ever enter your life as well?
A bit. No, I would have. It was a couple of months, but I wasn't at any of the really spectacular Munster performances. I've been to a good few, but I live near Thomond Park, so it's amazing. I think it's amazing when there's matches on. I love it.
Yeah,
you know, you've got that big game feel only down the road. I get frustrated with Limerick over the years. I think now the rugby's obviously with Munster. It's great the Cork people can get behind the Limerick team. Jokes that don't work in Cork. And the hurling was phenomenal. Has been phenomenal, you know, over the last while. But the soccer is just flatters to deceive forever, and it's so frustrating because there's so many. Like, I think Limerick, there was a study done years back, and there was more fellas playing soccer in Limerick than anywhere else in the country. More teams, but a lot of the time, the guys in the junior clubs are more comfortable there than playing League of Ireland. Going, well, why would I? You know, why would I go up to Finn Harps when I could just go to Janesborough on a Sunday morning, you know, and why am I driving up for 4 hours?
Which means it's untapped and that there's potential.
I think, like, there's huge potential. And it's every time there's like, you flat, like we went in Limerick, like Limerick don't exist at the moment. Our treaty are
treaty
there.
Is the
and I
club.
Want them to do well, but it's like trying to fall in love with a woman who just looks like and maybe has a similar name to the love of your life. I do want them to do well, but I don't feel the same.
Is soccer big everywhere in Limerick, or their pockets?
It's massive. Really? I think even out the county. I think whatever. If you play sport, you play soccer. You know, I think even hurling, football. There might be some people who don't, to a small degree. But I think obviously the more. Oh no, I prefer hurling. But you'll still kick a five-a-side, or you'll still play soccer. You know, you just need a tennis ball and one other person. You could be playing a version of it. Like,
why is Tommy Gaynor on your list?
Tommy Gaynor was the first proper local hero for me. He's a little bit older. The match I picked was UCD, and it was one, I think it was the worst weather for a match I was ever at. So it was up in Rathban. So it was Limerick City at the time, and there's the two dugouts in Rathban, which was another false dawn in Limerick. There's sketches of what the ground was meant to be when they set up the lotto. This is what we're going to build with the money, and we're still waiting. And it was raining, it was a monsoon season in Limerick, and there was a kind of like a press box between the two dugouts, and I was sitting there. There was no one at the match, and he put on an exhibition that was just mesmerizing. One of the things he did during the match was he slalomed through the UCD defence. The keeper came out, he stopped, beat the keeper, stopped the ball on the line, beat the keeper on the way out, and then beat him on the way in again and rolled it into the net. I think he only scored twice, but he was like, and it was just bucketing. Like, there was, you know, probably matches abandoned now, but it was just like, it wasn't just that. Gaynor, he went to Forest. Yeah. I remember him at Forest. He played in the League Cup, won a League Cup and a Simmet Cup, I think it is, with Forest. But he was such a talented footballer. I remember reading, he was at Forest at the same time as like Des Walker, Pierce, Neil Webb, like all these superstars. And his nickname was Pele.
Right.
You know, and they played the Soccer Six, which was a thing. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So there'd be Soccer Six on ITV, and Tommy played. So you might be, he wasn't like, he was a regular for a few seasons, but he would have been definitely on the Six Aside thing. And it was just because he's from Limerick, and I'd seen him play. Even when he came through first, they even played him at left back sometimes and played him in different positions. But I think, and he played, the amount of people as well from other teams, like he played for Rovers, Pats, I think Bowes, I think Derry.
Before he went?
No.
When he came back?
He was at Limerick United, and he won the Cup with Limerick United in 82. Then he would have gone to Rovers maybe, and then eventually came back to Limerick City. Then he went to Doncaster, Forest and whatever, and came back and played with Cork City. He came back.
Oh yeah,
and we were playing Cork, and Limerick were bottom of the league at the time, and Tommy's playing for Cork. And the first joke I ever shouted publicly when I heckled Tommy Gaynor, and we went 1-0 up, Dahi McMahon penalty, and I shouted onto the pitch, "Tommy, did you play any football when you were working in England?" Right? Got a huge laugh from the people around. And then Day 1-7-1 that day. Possibly similar to Ronaldo's performance.
The Roma game, yeah.
They were, you know, it was that thing. I met one of the Limerick players, Albert Finnan, the other day, and I was saying it to him about the match, and he goes, yeah, we thought after 10 or 15 minutes, we're doing all right here.
Carl, we got to go. That was great. If people want to book tickets, where's...
Oh, Carl Spain Comedian on Instagram. I'll eventually put stuff up there.
That was a brilliant episode. You had to be there. Thanks a million.
Thank you very much, sir. Cheers.